Hello, welcome to this episode of How to Learn a Language, the podcast all about how to learn a language, very much in the name. My name is Lindsay, I am your host, and this episode is an interview. It's actually the first interview that I've recorded intentionally for the podcast. So we had our first ever interview episode way back, like right at the beginning, but that was recorded with YouTube in mind. And this, I recorded knowing that the podcast exists today, in fact, the day that I'm filming this little intro. So yeah, it's quite exciting. And it's with someone that if you know my work and you've kind of been following for a little while, then you'll probably know this person as well. So I speak to Kirsten Cable. We have hosted, as you'll hear us talk about, many a podcast together of her show, The Fluent Show. And we've done lots of different projects together, including Women in Language, all sorts of things. So I wanted to talk to Kirsten specifically. Obviously, we've talked a lot about language in the past, but I really wanted to talk about her experience learning English primarily. And we talk about a lot more in the conversation. It's really, really, really nice, thorough conversation we have. But I really wanted to start there because I think it's an interesting topic. Like, is it different when you learn English versus learning other languages? And so I wanted to get Kirsten's perspective on that. So have a listen. I hope you enjoy this episode and I'll speak to you very, very soon. Enjoy. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. So, Kirsten, hi.
I'm on Lindsay's podcast.
Great to see you. We've never spoken before. So
no, I have dreamed of this day. This is so cool.
Yeah, I feel a little bit nervous because I know you just recently like made a course, right, about how to do interviews.
Oh, yes.
So like, you know, no pressure on me here to interview you. But also if people are listening to this or watching this and they don't know who you are, they've never heard of the Fluent Show. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Okay. Oh my gosh, this is so weird. Okay, so the reason it's weird, just in case you don't know, is because Lindsay and I we started our online language learning businessy things roughly around the same time as each other, which is sort of about 10 years ago, and sort of started seeing each other around on Twitter or whatever. I don't know, myspace.com. And I
definitely not MySpace.
I was starting to experiment with my podcast at the time, the Creative Language Learning Podcast, and had Lindsay as a guest. And Lindsay then became, because we had so much fun, I was like, do you want to become my co-host? And she just says yes to whatever you ask her, really.
Not everything, come on.
No, but like every project that, like, you're always such a good project partner. So Lindsay was like, yeah, I'm up for it, or I'm game. So Lindsay became my co-host and we have already done about 100 whatever podcast episodes together on a show that I used to host, which I highly recommend to you. If you're done with this one, please head over to fluent.show. Not done, like never listen again.
I was going to say.
Want more? No. So my name is Kirsten Cable. I run a website. It's called fluentlanguage.co.uk and hosted for a long, long time a podcast called The Fluent Show, which is co-hosted by Lindsay, where we do words of the year and top tools and a lot of really meaningful discussions and also debates on whether Sean Paul is better than Shakira, or actually just a Sean Paul Shakira appreciation society, really.
Wow, we are minutes in before we started recording. Kirsten said, oh, how can I get Sean Paul into the conversation? That didn't take long. I have to say, I'm impressed.
Yeah, well, that to-do list item is now done and I do not need to mention Sean Paul.
There we go. Now we can enjoy the conversation.
My own language background and all that stuff is I am from Germany. So my number Dutch sprache is Dutch. I speak native German. I didn't learn really formally languages until I was 10. And then I had a fairly good secondary school, so I did quite a few languages in that. I moved to England 20 years ago. I've now spent half my life pretty much in the UK. So I'm also kind of British and I still really love languages and yeah, make courses, talk to people, do some coaching for language learners, and you can find out the rest on my website. That's a long intro speech already.
It's all good. Thank you for that. I always feel that people do it themselves better than I ever could. So grateful. Thank you.
I am here to counterprove that.
And like we've obviously spoken, as you've just said, we co-hosted podcasts for a lot of episodes. So we've obviously spoken a lot about language and about our own languages. But what I wanted to really focus on today is how you learn English and maybe how that's been different learning other languages. Because I feel that there is, and I say this as a native English speaker, so you can obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but I do feel that there is this assumption perhaps by native English speakers that English is easier to learn because it's more prolific, because it's kind of everywhere. The TV gets exported, the music is all over the place. Like, and I just wonder if that was the case or how it differed from learning other languages, both in school and then kind of later in life as well. So yeah, English is kind of the focus. And I think as well, like there's going to be people that listen to this podcast who, like you, speak fluent English, but it's not their native language. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a sense there where people can relate to your experience on that. And that's going to be really interesting to hear feedback on. And also people like me who have never had to learn English in the same way that we learn other languages out of choice. So yeah, that's why I wanted to talk about it. So I'm curious. And you said you never started learning any language other than German until you were 10, right? But that wasn't English.
No, I started learning English when I was 10. Like English, that's when I went to the secondary school, the gymnasium. But for me, that was age 10. And then that's when I started having English lessons. And before that, I remember we did like, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. They don't really, they kind of tell you sort of what the words mean. But that was like a thing that we did in my, you know, like primary school when I was like 8, maybe.
So if you're happy and you know it.
It's kind of out of context. It's not lessons. Yeah. It's just today we're singing this thing. It happens to be in English. We also sang songs in French, songs in Hebrew. It wasn't really exceptional.
The song in French, was it Frère Jacques?
No, it was Sur le Pont d'Avignon.
Oh yeah, that's the other classic.
We did Frère Jacques, but that has a German translation, so we just sang that in German.
Ah, okay. I was going to say, maybe if you're happy and you know it, is the Frère Jacques equivalent, but also, yeah. Sur le Pont d'Avignon, doobie 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 doobie, yeah.
Yep, yep.
Oh, I remember.
And then, I don't know why Hebrew, but we had like a Hebrew song.
How curious, yeah.
This is fascinating for me because obviously when I make content, when I talk about language learning, I talk from the perspective, I talk to English native speakers because I live in England, because, and when I started my business, I was talking to English native speakers. And so I know, because I had already seen all the blocks that in Germany I hadn't encountered in that way. So the English native speakers, the at least the Brits that I've spoken to, and the Americans actually, they do have a talent for telling themselves extra that it's hard, which doesn't help anybody. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of where my fire came from to start my blog, to start talking to people. Like I have opinions, which means I always talk to people pretty much as a peer. Like, ah, yeah, you speak English, I speak English. And people, I think, often forget that I learned English as a second language, including me.
Yeah.
So it's strange. So I have to put myself into a different mindset today, which I'm very happy to do.
Yeah. So you started when you're 10, but I didn't realize it was that early, because for me, I thought from when we spoke before that it was pulp, that it was like pulp was your Shakira equivalent for me.
Pulp was 100%. Pulp was huge.
And how old were you?
But before that.
Okay.
Okay, so there is a truth to, I do not subscribe to, English is easier to learn, but there is a truth to what you mentioned before, and that is that English has, what are they calling it? They call it cultural
currency.
Currency is what I'm kind of thinking. There is a sort of, you know, in diplomacy, you say like you've got
soft power.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yes, English has. And that's really like due to the Americans, not the Brits, but then the Brits and the Americans kind of similar. So like culturally, there's like a soft power. And it is true and it is assumed that learning English is really, really important. But nobody learns a language because they're told it's important to learn it, right? We don't.
Do you think? I think some people do.
Yeah, they try, but it's not, you don't really get to the full, at some point.
To the heart.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yes, of course, people start a language because they think it's important, but then that's not the same as when I say learn, I really meant like assimilate somehow to it.
Okay. Go full depth. Yeah.
Not that you're not a valid learner if that's what not if you haven't done that. I've never assimilated that much with French. I speak French fluently, it's fine, but you know. So English, I'm trying to think. I've talked to Christian about this and about like Christian, sorry, being my husband, who's British. And I think there is something maybe even stronger in growing up German to the cultural dominance in the 80s when I grew up of America in particular.
More like,
we
so
got
than
a lot
the
of
UK.
Ads. Yeah, yeah, because
yeah,
they won the war
definitely.
And the Marshall Plan thing. And so Americans kind of had a really strong hand in building modern Germany and influence there. So we had a lot of, you know, like we have American military bases on German land. And there was just a lot, you know, American occupied and people knew some Americans. We knew people who've gone there and stuff. So I think without it becoming this like denial of a German identity, I think it was sort of America was cool. Always when I was growing up.
Same.
And
did Christian say the same thing? Christian
no.
being a native Brit? No, because I feel that America was cool when I was growing up. That was the understanding. There was this 90s kind of in the pulp era of like sort of Brit pop and then followed by like Spice Girls. There was this era of like cool Britannia. But generally, even now, I'd say like America was the cool. Not like
cool.
A regular English. I'm a cool English.
So the cool cousin.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
I've got a surfboard. California.
So you weren't drawn to that in the same way as...
No, how I like to go against stuff, seemingly.
Right.
Right? And they used to do... Before we had the internet, children, gather around the fire. God. when I was a kid... On TV, especially when we only had three channels, which until I was like six, we only had three channels, and then we got satellites, wow, the world. And the third channel, in England, you do this as well, they used to have a lot of TV programming that's like from the Open University or from the, you know, and they used to do the English learning programming, right? So we had this guy, and they're doing like little scenes. And it was kind of the English learning programming. And I remember kind of sitting in front of it to really understand what was happening. But it was essentially like a little language lesson. And I'm sat there being like fascinated by it, right? So that all to say, there's so many little bits. By the time I was learning, I started my first foreign language formal lesson, I was so ready. Mm-hmm. I was so ready. I was excited. I was looking forward to it. Like that was the thing that I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait. Give me the book. I want to hear all about Kevin and Kate who live in Whitby. Let's go. But then like the didn't realize this was going to be a conversation like about American influence, British influence. But like the people in the English book.
Yeah.
That English book is set in the UK.
I was going to say Whitby. That's a choice. They weren't in London.
No, they were not in London. They were not in London. They were in Whitby.
Wow.
They had an aunt in Swansea. Wales is not England.
Wow. Oh, what a good lesson to start off with. There's more than just London.
They have a friend in York. It was all very northern. They never spoke in northern accents, of course. Everybody spoke.
A nice clipped RP.
That's it, right? So there was also the prestige, I think, in how English was seen in my school of British English. Like American was kind of just like, yeah, you know, dirty, like.
Right, I was going to say.
You know,
yeah.
And British English was like the prestigious, this is the educated one, this is the
cup
one
of tea and a suit and an umbrella.
It's kind of subtle because you're like 10, of course, but it was certainly there. And I would say my teachers, I adored all my English teachers. I had.
Were they English?
No, not all Germans.
Okay.
All super Anglophile Germans.
Oh.
Super Anglophile Germans. Like they were, all the English teachers I would say we had at my school who were, that I ever had or that I remember now, super, super Anglophile.
Do you think you're an Anglophile?
Oh, I was, yeah, massively.
Was? What happened?
No, well, I live here now. You can't be an Anglophile because there's something about idealizing it, right? You can't be an Anglophile and live in modern Britain for 20 years and be
I think you
British.
Can. Like, I don't mean to bring down the tone, but a paedophile touches the kid. Like, there's still a paedophile.
Welcome to Lindsay's podcast. I don't know what that was.
We can cut that out, but but like an Anglophile, I think you can still be living in the country. But I don't know if I could be an Anglophile.
I don't know, but say, okay, so you're like a, let's say you're a Spainophile.
Hispanophile. I know it's Luso for Portuguese. Lusophile, Francophile, Hispanophile maybe, yeah.
But it's sort of, I was just, I used to have these, did I tell you about these little calendars I used to have? Postcard calendars? They're quite common. You still get them in Germany, like little desk calendars.
Okay.
And postcard.
Yeah.
And they used to be called Sehnsuchtskalender, so the calendars of longing. And the idea was like lots and lots of locations that there were just these 52 absolutely beautiful photos from a specific location. You can buy them from anywhere. And I always had like the England one or the Großbritannien one. Always, always had them. I have been to a few of the locations that I remember from the postcards. And it was just...
That's
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
So there's a real combination then of these little, and it's the same for me when I think back to my own sort of early influences of like, well, what got me started with this? There's just these sprinklings of different things that all kind of combine.
The powerful thing about that when you realize is like none of it's the lessons.
No,
none of it's the school lessons, but it's what that kicks off. And I think that's when people say that English is easier to learn. I don't think that is true as a language. It is not. It's got so many exceptions. It is not easy to pronounce. You will hear when a German speaks English to you, often German grammar coming through, you know, so same as when an English person
when
speaks
I
German
do the same,
to me, I can hear English grammar coming through. So it's not easy. That's not true. We don't all just magically soak it in. Don't know about the people who've got TV in English, because we're not like that. A lot of stuff is, dubbing is really strong in Germany. But that cultural dominance thing, it makes all the little hooks much more available. So then it gets easier to kind of attach yourself to something and to find something that is so you. And I think for me, being just a slightly, like I've always been like a slightly quirky child. I've always been like a little bit different. I know everybody says that, but like I have always been like a little bit different and felt a little bit different. And as teenagers do, you kind of look to see that somewhere. And for me, the kind of British eccentricness, so like late night, maybe Monty Python might be on TV and you'd be like, oh, what is this? You know, it's like they're being so funny. It's so strange. And then finding the music of Pulp, which, if you don't know, is like a Britpop band from the 90s and had a hit album.
She came from Greece, she had a thirst for knowledge. Cue copyright strike.
But they sang from this outsider perspective. And there was just something in how these people held themselves and the band and everything that just really massively spoke to me. And the thing is, I've just been to see Pulp for the first time ever in the UK 20 years later. The girl next to me was 20 years old, and I was like, I knew this band before you were born. This is unbelievable. But like, I was obsessed with this before you were, but also she knew all the words, so this is universal appeal. If you haven't heard this, you might like it even if you're 20. But I don't think ever really seen and understood the appeal of the song Common People, which is so strongly about class consciousness, as a song about class consciousness. For me, the first time I heard that, or like when I heard that song, it's got a line in it that it goes, everybody hates a tourist. I'm from a tourist area. they're all over in the summer. I was like, oh, yeah, the tourists. I didn't understand about like the class tourist or that idea that is so British. And when I saw it at the festival and I saw the Brits singing it, I was like, oh, I get it. I get your layer, you know, yeah. Like your extra layer. But I didn't have that accessible to me. And I've always loved that about learning a language and then going deeper, 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 the layers bit. So it still offers something new to me now.
That is so true. And I'm thinking in particular of, for me, like Bad Bunny, I know. And like you say, it's not exactly an unpopular opinion. Like there's universal appeal. Bad Bunny, like the most played Spotify artist for three yeah. years in a row, right? But like the song El Apagón, The Blackout, I listen to that and I think, woo, woo. Me gusta la canta de Puerto Rico. I'm like, yeah, this is good, right? But then when you translate the lyrics, when you listen to people talk about it a bit more and you understand that actually, you know, this was released with the music video was released inside a 20 minute documentary about very serious, you know, things happening in yeah. Puerto Rico in yeah. terms of like the people taking over the power and all of this.
Yeah.
Like you then understand this extra layer of why people love that so much. And
if
like
you went to a gig in Puerto Rico, then there would be a really passion. Feel it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. That's how I felt. I was like, yeah. Oh, I get the, like I got there was anger passion in the audience. There's something, they're saying something that, and the fact, I mean, just put to the side, the fact that this still applies,
yeah.
you know, like this still works. The reason yeah. the song's popular now is not because it's about the 90s. It's about universal things, right? So like music has to say something to us, I think, about our life. And I mean, as I often say,
even if it's one
marketing,
line.
When I'm teaching the marketing, when I do the podcast, I always think like, what does this say to you about your life? Because that's really what it's about, right?
Yeah. Even if it's not that nuanced, full layered understanding, it's just that one line, everybody's a tourist, that hooks you in, that gets you wanting to learn more English.
Yeah.
And so presumably then, so Pulp kind of...
Then you want to know what the next line is, right? Then you want to know
what
he's saying.
Where
next.
Does this fit in? Yeah.
And Pulp in particular, I don't know if you know this, but like if you have you ever bought a record or do you own anything that's
like a vinyl,
a physical Pulp record or a CD?
Pulp specifically no, but yeah, no, I had CDs for a while.
They always had a thing where it said when you know, like, because I used to, this is again before the internet, before I could just go on Genius or whatever, like you wouldn't know the words of what somebody is singing. So you're sat there, and I remember just being sat there and like slowly listening to like 5 seconds of this thing. Couldn't slow it down, couldn't speed it up. It was just in my CD player. Listen to 10 seconds and be like, what's he saying? Okay, try and write this down. Try and work out what it says. And like our most popular teeny magazine, Bravo, would print 2 lyrics and translate them.
Mm-hmm.
Rather florally, rather ridiculously, but like that's what they did. So you'd get all these boy band lyrics from like NSYNC, where it was like, girl, my heart is speaking to you, and then translated into your language as if it's this like super profound thing, you know, where it's like, we're gonna go, I don't know, we're gonna live it up at a party, and you'd be like, oh yeah, okay. And it's just, I think there's a real, when you have that much cultural dominance and all of your, not all of your radio music, but a very large part of your radio music and your music television. Again, I'm an old woman, let's just face it. Like, and everything around you is in this language. There is this kind of, there is definitely that drive to go, well, what are they saying? What does this mean? So like the radio used to do, they had like little lyric sessions where they'd translate the words and tell you what this means. Yeah.
That's
fascinating. Because it's not assumed everybody can speak English, is it?
Could I ask you a question about that? Did you ever feel resentment to English because of that sort of cultural dominance? No.
No, just massive like desire. Like German music is available. German music is not, it wasn't hard. I have, you know, the indie band Tokotronic that I'm so into. Like they always sing in German. Wow.
Right.
Never mind. They're a good band. But like they always sing in German. There was nothing wrong with it for me personally. No, I know what you mean, like you'd get that from your parents, but they're like, oh, everything's in English these days, man.
That's what I was thinking. I wonder.
Well, there's a radio channel for that. It's like the Schlager channel, you can go and listen to that. That's fine. No, that it doesn't. It hasn't harmed the German music industry as such, I would say.
Yeah.
I don't think there's enough of us. It's fine.
I'm thinking you're saying about radio, and I think it still exists in France, right? The rule of every third song needs to be in French.
Yes, that's a French thing. Like, as far as I'm aware, Germany has no such law. Germany's always been a bit, I think, because we're less of a centralized country, right? So we've got the dialect diversity, and Hochdeutsch is kind of made up anyway.
Yeah.
There's that sort of awareness. So I don't think we are as protective in that way. And you get a lot of anglicisms, we call anglicismen, in the German language.
Yeah.
I can't speak for how people, you know, how exactly it is now, how people feel now. We had this, I think, for Word of the Year, maybe? Like, you know how many times we've done Words of the Year and the German words are like half the list is English words?
Yeah, or we do the German Word of the Year, and you're, as someone, like you say, who's lived in the UK for 20 years, looking at that going, why is this the Word of the Year? What does this mean?
I need to
what's
read the explanation.
What's the layers, you know, having to look back in that way?
Yeah, language is never separate from its cultural context.
No.
And that's the thing of like English. I think English has this cultural dominance because of just, I don't know, the way the world's gone in the 20th century.
Mm.
There was a real cultural dominance in there. Do you want me to show you my dictionary?
Go on.
Okay, so I still got my old, like, there you go.
This is what my is did. That your like school sticker?
Yes!
I used to have those. Lindsay Dow, 7KA.
This is it's just got my name, like my unmarried name, Hammers, and my address and our phone number.
Yeah,
which is fine. You can buy good wine there, so if you ever want to, nobody cares. This is my mum's dictionary. This is from the 70s, and I used to have this next to my bed every night. So it's like proper, came out in 1970, copyright 1953.
Wow.
This is the she gave me her dictionary because we're frugal people, so it probably won't have. I don't know what's a modern word that I could look at, like
mobile
browser
phone.
It's not gonna have that in it, is it? And just some to fag, exhaust yourself.
Mm-mm.
No, I know. I mean cigarettes, right? In the 90s. It's I used to sleep with this next to my bed.
Yeah.
Not for some kind of like romanticizing or anything. It's because whenever I was able to get hold of like maybe an English teeny magazine, like Just 17 or something like that, or when friends went to England, I was the one who was like, get me a copy of Enemy. I really want a copy of Enemy. This used to be a big thing in the UK, New Musical Express, or maybe I'd buy them and stuff. And I would like, that was all I had. So I would like milk it properly. And often I'd want to know what the words are. And what I was saying earlier about the pulp, the physical records. So all the lyrics used to have, you take out the little booklet of the CD and it has all the lyrics printed.
Yeah.
And there's always had this little note on it that says NB, which already you're like, don't know what that means, need to work out what that means. Please do not read the lyrics while listening to the recordings. And
ooh.
Because it said that, it's like, I don't know, it's a quirk, it's an affectation. I don't know what it... I have read
they're
it.
Not like other bands.
They're not like other bands. Special. I mean, also, I was like the only girl I was the only pulp fan in the village.
Yeah.
And the other 25 villages, right? So it really was, I'm special because of this sort of a thing. That meant I would really study the lyrics because I did want to know what they're saying. But I took that so seriously. Like, I don't know, maybe that's a gem mentality thing that somebody gave me a rule. I did not break that rule. Mm. I did not break that rule. They completely made it up. But like, if you know, I took that so seriously. And that meant I was like studying those lyrics and really going, okay, and now I have to try and remember this and I'm going to look it up. So it wasn't as much about I'm learning vocabulary. Like, I mean, there were vocab lists in school and I did really well. And I always got A's in English. Never got A's in much else. But English was like my... Then I just started taking pride in it. And then it was important to me to get the A. But really, it wasn't hard. It wasn't hard because the real learning was somewhere else.
With the pulp lyrics.
With the pulp lyrics, with the blur lyrics, with the whatever I'd I mean, I had a cooler shaker CD. It's all it's all there. But like, yeah. It was in a different part of my life, I think, where the learning happened. Yeah. I remember I bought the videotape for the full Monty for 50 marks, which is very expensive for a videotape. And in a place where I went to a shopping center day, you know, because I also really small village here. So it's like a 4-hour trip to go shopping. And I took it at home and I watched so much of it. And it was so hard to understand what they're saying.
How old were you when you watched The Full Monty?
Like 16 or something.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like a film about people literally stripping. Like, okay.
Yeah, but it's...
Our cultural dominance is doing its work.
Never thought about that as a big taboo. It wasn't...
16, that's fine.
No, but like one of the first things he says in the film is he greets somebody with A up. Which obviously you've no idea. It's all in Sheffield dialect.
This is where your kind of, can I say, obsession with Northern England comes in?
Well, Pulp were from Sheffield, right? So I was always kind of, that was sort of I'm interested in this.
Yeah.
I don't know if, I don't have an obsession with Northern England. I just moved there.
Right. So that wasn't before that kind of.
No. I remember our first trip to England. We went to London. We stayed with some lady in Wimbledon. Mm-hmm. My parents it's eventually basically just gave in. I really wanted to do a Sprachurlaub, you know, which is, you see a lot. Now I live in Canterbury. I see so many of the little, like, it's when your kid is like 14, 15.
Yeah.
And you're sending them to like language camp.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, you know the company EF.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They do. That was their main trade. That is their big trade. You have it. You can send your kid to Spain for 2 weeks, like France and England. And then some of my friends were going to England. I was campaigning for it at home, but the budget wasn't there.
Did you ever do exchanges?
Yes.
Like with school? Okay.
Yeah. Two.
And do you think that helped?
Did it help me learn English?
Yeah.
I was already so obsessed at the time. It helped. It was more of a kind of. It helped you experience a world where people actually spoke this, which is mind blowing. You know, when you're learning a language, it's so abstract, and then you go somewhere and you're like, "Oh my god, this is real."
Yeah,
and that's still, you can do it on Duolingo now, and you'd still have that experience.
Yeah, especially like you say, living in a small village. You know, I imagine not much speaking practice. Although, can we talk about one of my favorite, one of the things we have talked about in English? Oh, you know what I'm going to say. It's my favorite thing. I'm very tempted when people are like, how should I learn a language? I should respond with this. Do you want to share?
What, my eavesdropping on the tourists?
No. Oh, that's. Yeah, that's not embarrassing. That's just like what you do. I do that all the time.
Okay.
No. I'm talking about.
But how many streets do you follow them around?
Oh, I don't follow people.
Yeah. See. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't do that anymore. It's legal. It's fine.
No, that's not what I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say about phone boxes.
Phone boxes.
Yeah.
Oh, with the ringtones.
Ringtones.
But you'd ring people up.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I did that from home as well, but it's like very expensive. So you're better off doing it on your own money. But yeah, we had a phone box in my village, and I would, if I say had an English language magazine or something, had a phone number in it, or you just, I don't know, like adverts in newspapers sometimes would have phone numbers on. And then sometimes I would just like ring the number, like, you know, like the 0044 for the UK. And then already when it's ringing and it goes, dude, dude, that's not what a German ringtone sounds like when you're ringing. It goes, dude.
Oh, so that's already exciting.
That's mind blowing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, already, like, you could just hang up right there. That's already like, you're broken. You're gone.
Yeah.
You're gone. And then somebody might answer and I answer in English. You go, like, put a phone down.
I love that so
much. What on earth are you going to say?
Did you ever Did you ever say hello? Or was it always
I think maybe if I had like a really courageous moment, I might have gone like,
oh, it's just so cute. I can just really picture, like, you know, and I just imagine like someone walking their dog going past the phone box and like, oh, she's there again. Like this idea of like everyone knew, but you didn't know that anyone knew, you know?
Oh, I don't think I rang phone boxes because I wouldn't have had the number.
No, you in the phone box, right?
Oh, in the phone.
Yeah, yeah. And people in the village see you and they're like, there she is again, calling England.
Imagine, like, or like, you know, like in England, you've got this like one village, I just thought this like little whittling or something, and everybody's like on their morning walk and a phone box is ringing. So, ah, that's the German kid again.
There she is.
That would be amazing. No, I don't know. I think there is something, I've said that before, about like growing up in such a small place,
mm-hmm.
where like that's, you really look for your lines to the outside world.
Yeah.
Again, maybe less now with, you know, the line to the outside world is easy.
That's one thing I wanted to ask about. Like, so much of your story with English is shaped by the era that it was in. I think we can call the 90s an era now, can't we?
Yeah.
Fine. It's terrifying, but we will. Yeah, literally a different century. But like, it's so shaped by that.
Mm.
And I do wonder what you think. If you were born, you know, 10 years ago and now you're 10 and you're starting learning English now, yeah. How that would be different. If you would find the same drive and spark when it is so much easier to access and so much more prolific. Like, was part of the thrill of it the exclusivity of it?
The language itself wasn't hard to access, right? You just put radio on. The language itself was really easy to access. That wasn't the thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was that I found it was so available that on the German radio, they played the Pulp song.
Yeah.
I loved the Pulp song. And then it was like, imagine I didn't then just like look it up. And then you have to wait. It's actually, in a way, it makes it harder because I can't then like go down a rabbit hole. I am waiting until the next time we go to Trier, which is an hour's drive, and you really might have to wait a week or two, and then hope that my parents take me, and then at some point go to the record shop and like look in the bit under P and see if it's there, and if it's not there, you're back at square one. You kind of might have to try again. So I think maybe I don't think it's harder to get obsessed and deeply into something. I can imagine it maybe these days you'd move on a little bit quicker.
That's what I think too.
But you can just then dive from one into the next and go deeper into a particular area. So no, I don't think it's impossible or anything like that now. And again, I don't think it's the language itself. It's that I found things that I wanted in my life in a very teenager melodramatic way. And that was my window.
Yeah.
So that's more that. And in the same way, like, you know, like when people learn French now, often you learn French as an English native speaker, often because you have this dream of like maybe the romantic city of Paris, or don't really understand that. Have you been to Paris? I mean, but never mind. But like, you know, you have this dream. You have maybe you dream of, oh, if I moved there and like in Provence, among
the I'd have a fresh baguette every morning.
Yeah. I'd cycle with a little dog and a little baguette, and I'd have a beret on, and there's me like with my idyllic. It's Belle from the Disney thing, Beauty and the Beast. There we go. You know, like you have. I think, at least for me, maybe there's still a little bit of the dream when I learn a language. Like with learning Welsh, there is still some sort of a dream attached to it. And that's, some languages make that easier than others, because I think they just speak to you at that different moment in your life.
I'm glad you brought up Welsh, because I wanted to ask you as well how English has differed from when you've then learned other languages, because you learn other languages in school alongside English, right? Latin and French.
Had to do French. Yeah. So English compulsory. And then in my school, 2 years later, so age 13, 12, 13, the choice was French or Latin.
Mm-hmm.
I chose French, went with that. And then they had like a sort of afternoon club thing, Italian, did that.
Ooh.
And then after, when my sixth form equivalent started, the Italian thing fell away.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're still doing French and English. And so I already had this identity as like, languages are my thing. I like languages.
Yeah.
As a side note, one of my best friends, who knew me really well at the time, we were best friends, has once remarked that maybe because of how I think and how I, you know, what works for me, learning wise, the languages felt more accessible to me because they're less regimented. And you can do a thing where you're like, I'm just reading pop music lyrics and then you're bringing that back in. So I wasn't that good at homework. I'm not that good with detail or like specific prescribed things. Somebody tells me like, do this thing. It's really systematic.
Yeah, get all your prepositions perfect. Yeah.
I get very, very bored very quickly.
Yeah.
The way I teach even German is I try to de-emphasize the get everything perfectly right. I look at the big picture. I try to get you to see the big picture first and then say, okay, like now you can fine tune bits if you want. But for me, it's often enough to get the big picture,
yeah,
right? So maybe languages lend itself to how my brain wants to process stuff. I don't know. But it made, you know, she said it in a specific context. So that was interesting. Yeah. When Italian fell away, I started doing 5 lessons a week Latin. And that was because I thought, if I want to go to university and do languages at university or become a teacher ever, German university, don't know if they still do, at the time they required a thing called Latinum.
Oh.
So you had to show Latin.
Wow.
Yeah. If you want to be a religious education teacher, you also need the Graecum.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. See, yeah, like here, especially in that sort of same era, like Latin was very much grammar school material,
mm-hmm.
which now there's a handful of kind of home counties.
Yeah.
That maybe still have
in England, right. Like this is a farmer's kid learning Latin. It wasn't to me a big deal.
It was just normal. Yeah. Like
really
Latin
fun actually.
You just didn't get the opportunity unless you were like a private school grammar school kid, really.
Being from a region where like Germany's oldest city is really near and like a lot of stuff is Roman, it was actually really cool because there's a lot of like random old stuff with
the
Roman inscriptions and you can imagine them walking around and you know, it actually felt quite relevant. It was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did all of those. And that was my schooling.
Yeah. So there's an element of choice in that, but it's all the primary lessons, even if it's not where all the learning happened for you, the primary lessons was formal, shall we say. It was school.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of like formal substance there. Like
and
if so, clauses and all that stuff. Yeah.
So when did you first go on to self-study, to choose a language for yourself, by yourself completely?
Apart from like the odd sort of 1 week dabble here and there, probably Russian. So not actually, because then I moved to England and I did university and again, like French and English formally. I then did, well, I don't know, what is self-study, right? So that was still like for a qualification. And then I started and then did my translation masters, which wasn't adding new languages. It was about a skill to do with language, right? Mm. That's what I thought I was going to be, like a translator. Very quickly realized I'm not going to be a translator. Jesus Christ, bad idea.
Oh, so you have to be a teacher because that's the only other alternative.
Mm-hmm.
You translate or you teach?
I freelance translated and I was looking around going like, what on earth, like what am I going to do? I knew at the time that I could work in like export sales. So I was looking at that kind of thing. And that's when I found international student recruitment. And I happened to get a job at the university where I studied. And because
of that. Is this why you started learning Russian? Because of the Kazakhstan stuff?
Yeah, but I came later. But yeah. Because, well, I was kind of interested and stuff. But first, they did something at that university where the main French third year module, so like a French like C1, C2 module, they had open to the public. If you wanted to take a high level French class, you could just whack it, like walk
wow.
in.
Because nice.
I mean, how many third year French students are there? Like 12. So you just walk in and you become a part of like that class. So I took the module I'd already done in my degree, retook it 4 years later and did it again. I did much, much better. Merci, Sylvie. Like I did much, much better. I was really pleased. But that was the first time I think I actively went, okay, choice of learning a language. So when you say solo learning or self-study, it was in a formal environment. For me, I've learned it's really good to follow some sort of a formal thing that somebody else just does all the thinking and organizing, and I could just show up. It helps me.
Yeah,
I can self-study without that. I can and I do, but that is just nice. And I like group classes, so I just went and did that, and then started traveling more. Maybe 2-3 years later, went to Kazakhstan, and I was just generally traveling around the world. But Kazakhstan was a very like really low English country, and the street signs all in Kazakh and Russian, and I was like, I don't even know the difference. I can't even tell which is which.
Yeah,
can't read any of the street names, and I'm starting like with the city map, puzzling out where is like Fedorov Street or whatever, like Ulitsa, whatever. And then you're learning, okay, Ulitsa is this. This is what that little bit on the sign. Because I like walking around and to get around to like my meetings.
Yeah.
I don't really like taxiing it everywhere. Never have.
Yeah.
So I'd always be the person who's like rucksack. I'm just not a formal person in that way. And that's kind of where, almost by necessity, because they just gave me a map that was, you know, if the street sign doesn't have English on, what are you going to do, right? So, and I started learning, that's when I started learning Russian, I think. Probably Russian was my first, I would say, new, not French, self-study. Because Spanish, that was all classroom as well. And that was just like, this qualification happens to have Spanish in, so we'll teach you some.
How did that differ then with Russian from everything that had come before it?
I think I've always known that in order for me to do a language, I have to find the interest. I can't just show up.
You got to find your pulp.
Yeah, I got to find it. I mean, my pulp, that's like the deep passion, right? This is amazing. But, you know, like you got to find the something, right? Because otherwise it's here. And if it's just here, I'm sorry, it goes in and then it's gone, right? That's like, it doesn't really hold on. So I think I had to find the interest, and for me it was nice because it was interest first, right? Whereas when I started learning Spanish, it was like, yeah, I'm here, you know, with Italian it was like, it was food, to be honest, because we've got a lot of Italian restaurants in Germany, so it was easy to see the language on menus and stuff. But I think with Russian it was just the fact that those were actual places I was going. And I had an instant utility in like deciphering actual signs in the street. And often, like, it's Sveti is flowers, right? You know, I don't know, you've not been to Russia. Like, if you go to Moscow.
Kind of tricky to go right now.
That's true. Yeah, I went before.
I started learning at a great time.
I went to Russia at the time where there was this sort of weird, like, political, like, we're cool with Russia. But in Kazakhstan less, but in Moscow and stuff, they had all these kiosks, flower kiosks everywhere. So you see the Sveti, Sveti, Sveti. And then because I was with people from there, I could go like, oh, you've got so many flower kiosks. And then you get a story from them about International Women's Day. And, you know, like, oh, that's when the men buy the flowers kind of a thing. And you get this little like extra, right? So it was that what I described earlier about English, where like you literally have to like go to the phone box and bring somebody up for it to become real. This one, when you have the interest space or when you're solo studying, for me, it's kind of, it starts with real.
Yeah.
And then I go, oh, what is this?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I would say that's, if you're asking me the difference, that's the only thing that.
So there's the combination there then with Russian of interest first and also utility for going to Kazakhstan for these trips for work. Is Welsh next after that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we were already doing the podcast then. This whole drama of, can I abandon Russian? Oh my God. And I had to really get to like, okay, this is what I wanted out of Russian.
Yeah.
I'm now free. I had to like free myself.
Yeah, that feeling of, but I have to take it to C2. Like once you can abandon that, you can find.
Like, why did I start in the first place if I'm not going to finish?
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you never finish a language.
No. Well, for me, I then went, okay, I was interested in learning Cyrillic.
Yeah.
I mean, I can say some stuff in Russian. I can still, yeah. you know, greet and do pleasantries and yeah. tell you I don't speak Russian and Nirozumyum. But ultimately, I don't really speak any Russian.
Yeah.
But I got what I wanted. And then, yeah, then I was free. I allowed myself to go with Welsh. And Welsh is 8 years now, right? So that's...
8 years.
Yeah.
Is Welsh your second to English in terms of like...
Like passion?
Or is it first?
Good question. I don't feel like I'm learning English anymore in that way.
Right. When do you think that stopped?
Not long after I moved here, I don't think. Maybe.
Because as we said, you never stop, you never finish. But
no, but then
the
also
activeness,
like, every
of it.
Day you got to function in English.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So then you're not focusing on the language as much anymore as the functioning, and you got to just like do stuff. So, and it was an entirely new challenge coming here because, for whatever reason, Lindsay, I moved to the north, but I did move to Preston, and you know, people in Preston have an accent.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand a word when I first got there.
Yeah.
You know, so it just became different. And then it wasn't like, and also it then had contact with reality. So the romanticized English image, of course, doesn't always last.
Okay.
A little bit. Sometimes I'm just like, oh, look, it's like exactly how I thought my life would be. Sometimes you're like, oh, it's what I thought it would be growing up. It's great. But it doesn't, you know, you also get to know all of the rubbish and admin, and you have to put the bins out and all the things that
you have to put make the bins
I don't
out.
Know, like, you know,
that's not in the textbook, is it, that lesson?
No, that's Come yeah on. But life isn't so exciting anymore, you know, like it's real, so it's different.
So do you think Welsh has replaced that spot that English maybe had before you moved here in terms of passion and the difference and the slightly exoticness? I use the term loosely. I think exotic is a rubbish word.
I mean, anyway. I'm not learning Welsh in order to position myself or something like that, I would say.
What do you mean position yourself?
You know, like as in like not that I was learning English, but like I was listening to pop. There was an element of
identity.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I'm a cool kid kind of a thing. Yeah. I'm the real cool kid. Yeah, you all look cool and act like I'm not, but I'm the cooler. I'm cooler than you. I don't need that now as much, seeing as, you know, you grow up and you're an adult and then you kind of know you're cool, hopefully.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed for all of you. Okay, what I'm trying to like, what I'm thinking about is that the passion isn't the same. And I think it's because the need isn't the same. You know, like that's the identity part. Like, I don't need that as much.
When you say the passion isn't the same, do you mean the passion is more or less or different?
Less.
Mm.
Less. But I was very intense.
With Welsh?
With English.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because like, and I'm thinking of you with Welsh and I see it as like a love story.
The
English must have been like proper
hot
highs.
Yeah. Age 10. Welsh is, I mean, I love it. I do. I really, really love it. There is a lot in it for me. It's the sounds, but like something I've said before, it's like the fact that it isn't, there is no Welsh and English in the same way, because I do live in this country and it's actually this country. So we're back to the layers. That's how I felt. Yeah. I was like, wow, there's a whole hidden bit here. There's a whole hidden level.
Yeah.
Let's get in there. Like, let's dive in. Let's learn. And it's taught me so much about, to be honest, it's taught me all the way like up to colonialism. And like, I understand the native speaker privilege thing differently. It's really taught, like, learning about Welsh taught me a lot about what English is like and what the English are like from a different perspective and a new perspective. That sounds really overly critical. It is.
No, it doesn't. But quite a unique perspective, because literally could not be closer geographically. Mm-hmm. So there's no other language that you could learn that will have quite that same teachings, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And through the revival and stuff, like Scotland is slightly different because the history is different.
Yeah.
Right? There's probably a lot more fight back.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot, the adversarial and the whole, they had a whole also royal family and stuff. Wales also did, but that all just fell away much sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think back to my life in a UK test book, and the way in there was sort of like, and then we went to Wales to help them out. Went to Ireland to help them out.
Oh, wow.
If that's what you say, cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm paraphrasing heavily, of course. So with Welsh, it is not the same. I'm just not as obsessed. But I do really, really enjoy it. And it's like a delight to learn, and just so, like, it's so much fun for me.
Yeah.
I never really think about, oh, how am I gonna learn? It's like, I never think about like my method or anything. With Chinese, it was much more like, okay, well, what strategy am I gonna do?
Are Chinese, you still learning Chinese?
Mm-mm. No.
And how did you get to that
up to
point?
HSK1, maybe like with Russian, I was like,
I was gonna say,
yeah, cool.
Yeah.
It was my lockdown language.
Okay.
Yeah. That's how I, that's
and then
how
you're
I,
like, I'm free. Zaijian Chinese.
I know. I bought a guitar. Now I can play a pop song now.
There you go. Yes. Combine interests and language learning. It's a beautiful thing.
That's it. But yeah, I don't know. Like, there's a, it has enough culturally to make it really sticky for me and really interesting.
Mm.
It has something maybe that it adds to my identity, but I certainly don't, not in the same way. Not in the same way. I'm not like a Cymrophile or something.
I'm glad you've brought that up, actually, because I think it's interesting when you, because I think you probably were learning Welsh around the same time I kind of discovered that Guarani existed. So we both were learning these languages in
like very similar, small languages.
Similar but different situations.
Mm.
And I definitely felt that like, I'm learning this because I'm super interested in this place and learning languages that live alongside Spanish. And, you know, I had all of these reasons and going there, etc. But then, like, you do feel this kind of thought of, are people thinking I'm only learning this language to look different, to be like, you know, the Guarani person, like, mm-hmm. you would be the Welsh person. Like, yeah. Did that ever cross your mind as well?
Maybe. But I know it's not.
You know it's not true. And yeah, well, I know it's
also
not true.
I mean, to be honest, if I'm cool because I'm learning Welsh, I'll take it. That's fine. I mean, as this conversation might show, I've got very little to go with, so I'll take it. But, you know, there's a sort of, if an implication, it's like a choice, like almost like a business choice.
Yeah.
Like, stand out in the polyglot world.
Yeah.
That is obviously ludicrous. Why would I sacrifice, I know, right? So much of my life to something like that?
So much time and effort and energy.
But also, like, it doesn't matter to me in the same way, because it's like 8 years still here, still doing my thing.
Mm.
Right. I know the long, I didn't know the long game of it at the time, but it just, I remember you at the time were grappling also with the kind of, is there an ethical concern? Because for me, that doesn't
it's
come in with Welsh. Like,
yeah.
It is a repressed language that has really suffered and has had a lot of discrimination. But grand scheme of things, rich country, white people, right? And for you, it wasn't like that. So I remember you were sort of thinking about that at the time.
Yeah. It was an interesting language for so many reasons.
Yeah.
For everything we've just discussed, for resources and how that completely differed. It really changed my perspective. And like you say, Welsh then changed, gave you that opportunity to learn more about English and the English.
So much.
And kind of gave you this viewpoint. Mm-hmm. Learning Guarani gave me this other viewpoint of all language learning in general as well, for all these different reasons. And I think that's the thing that I'm most kind of grateful for, well, not actually, no, it's not the thing, but it's like a thing that I'm really grateful for from that experience. But what, okay, we've talked about Welsh.
Do you want a RuPaul quote for this? I've got a RuPaul.
You didn't tell me you were also going to put in RuPaul and Sean Paul.
RuPaul, Sean Paul. Any Pauls? All the Pauls. Any Pauls, I'm here. RuPaul, this is like a Drag Race episode where we had someone teaming up, like a white queen with a black queen. This is in America, and it was sort of, and the white person was like, we're doing this American, this black American show, and I feel a bit self-conscious because what if people say I'm parodying or something? And what RuPaul said, I thought was really good, which was, if it comes from a place of love, and that's how I feel about Welsh Guarani, right? If you're doing it out of love, then people can say, people can shit talk all they want.
Yeah.
It doesn't, ultimately you're still here and you're doing it for the right reasons and you're here. And if you in yourself know that, then, I mean, if somebody really wants to be like, Kirsten Campbell's learning Welsh, you only to seem cool. Like, that is an amazing use of your time, really. That is baffling to me. That would be amazing. So it didn't occur to me in the same way. Would be funny though.
Which language does no one else speak? Let's learn that one to stand out.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So
it's cool though, because some people have said to me, I got interest. I'm learning Welsh because you talked about it.
Ah, oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
That's really fun, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like I said to you before we started recording, like my dissertation was about Guarani and social media, but like I see a lot more than I did when I started of the language. I'm not saying that's because of me at all, but I think it's like when you buy a green car and then you see that green car everywhere, you know, I think there's a sense of that too, of like where is everyone learning this language? Yeah. Right. But yeah. Okay. So anyway, final question. I have no idea how long we've been talking, but final question: what is next? And when I say that, I don't mean what's your next language, because that's not necessarily.
Thank God.
That's not necessarily the mark of a successful language learner. Like you know, quantity versus quality. Whatever, we can talk about that all day, another episode. But like, what's next? Is it that you are fully content with where you're at and Welsh is continuing? Is it that you want these other languages that you've previously studied? Is it that there is a new language? What do you think comes next? Or are you fully open to what happens?
So I know, okay, from a really practical point of view, I know that my online Welsh course is going to continue next year and I can book in now. So I'm just going to book in. So I'm probably just going to skedaddle on into continuing to do the same, but like at ever higher levels.
Yeah.
My Welsh level, according to what the book says on it, is B2 now.
Yeah.
And I would really love to be more comfortable in Welsh and to speak more, become more comfortable reading in the context of me also being super lazy with it. Lazy, but you know, like if I don't want to do it, I can't get myself to do it anyway. Yeah. So I do my homework late, but it doesn't matter. Like one of the beauties of being in a group class is it makes me much more aware that I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, I don't have to be the best, but I'm not the worst, because I don't think there is even the worst at such a like high level. So it's really enjoyable. They talk so much. It's a local class, but online. Delivered online, so they talk so much about like what's going on in the Rhondda, so I'm like, cool, don't know what's going on in the Rhondda. I'm going to a festival in Cardiff, like a Welsh music festival this summer. The Eisteddfod, the Welsh National Festival, is next year in the Rhondda, like where my Welsh class is, so I'm totally going. It's also the closest part to England, or like one of the closest parts to England, so excited about that. I don't see Welsh is something that's going to not be in my life in the near future at all. Even though I don't live there and all that stuff, but that's just, I don't even question about that. And then in English, like I said, I just live here. I'm fully settled. I don't think about it in that way anymore. But I do still, I think there is still a part of me that kind of aims for making sure I have the like idyllic postcard moments almost. And just every now and then I have to, like, I live in England and I get to do this. Like, it's cool. You still kind of get that. It's a total privilege to have lived, you know, to live here out of choice.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the world's easiest country to live in at the moment, but maybe none of them are. But, you know, even the fact that I know that and that's like, this is my life. Like, I know much more about English politics, British politics than German politics, is really cool. I bought a book in French the other day, just a sort of gardening book. I'm not actively learning French, but I do still engage with it all the time. But I don't really think about that in the sense of, oh, I must, you know, if I tell people I speak French, I need to like show my level. It's more internally, I've worked very hard for this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, that's not dropping.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then if anything else comes, it'll come. I can't imagine it would be a long-term thing without something else giving way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. I think like there is, like you just said about with French, you know, the minute that you say you do anything on the internet, there's almost, especially I think with languages, there's almost this pressure of like, but how do I prove that people will be waiting for
what
the,
you got to show for yourself?
The YouTube video of, you know, polyglot speaks 17 languages, like, nah, I'm good.
It's just like, I want to, like I said, it's more, French didn't come as easy to me as English, but which doesn't mean it's a harder language. It just means I didn't quite enjoy it as much.
For you, that's exactly.
For me. Yeah. I just wasn't as into it, right? I'm not as into the whole baguette. And it's probably because I come from really near the French border.
So geographically close, yeah.
I wanted somewhat exotic, like Sheffield. Preston, woohoo. It's ridiculous in hindsight, but that was really what to me was.
It's not. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So, but I've also worked really hard in French and taken the exams, and I have the capacity, and I feel like it would be, for me, just personally, again, not to say everybody can let their languages do whatever they want. I know my French skill is good enough that I can pick it up and activate it fairly quickly. And I do want to do that at least once or twice a year, 100%. And it's just, I just feel like it was too much work. I don't want to let it all go rusty.
That's fair. I can relate to that. I've got my, I've got a French and an Italian one on the go at the minute that are like, one of them is called Improve Your French, Teach Yourself, Improve Your French. It's a very old book. And then another is Enjoy. It's another Teach Yourself, Enjoy Italian. All like just whatever I spot, you know, in a, especially an Oxfam bookshop in the language section, they're the best ones. If I think, oh, it's for, you know, Portuguese or Italian or something that I've done, but it's been a while, and it's that bit more advanced or something, I always pick them up and just very casually, you know, with no deadline, with no pressure, kind of.
You've worked hard, right? It's good to keep it.
Yeah, you wanna have them. Whereas there's something like Bulgarian, you know, I was a decent conversational level in Bulgarian after 6 weeks, and I think the quicker you learn, the quicker you lose.
Would strongly subscribe to that.
Yeah, you know, so I did really well in 6 weeks. I went to Bulgaria, had a time being able to speak and get around and whatnot. But then when I came back, I can't remember what it was, maybe Guarani, I was doing something else. I had to, you know, there's only so many hours in a day. And so I kind of have lost that one a lot quicker. And I think it was only 6 weeks. So there's less of a pull to maintain what was once there, you know?
I think maintain, I have a weird relationship with like the word maintain, because it just implies that like your level must be, it just sounds like work. I don't know. Like to me, it just sounds like, if it sounds like work, essentially I will do it. I have work ethic, but it won't be as good. It won't be as good, you know? So yeah, I've got I've got the Italian, one of the Italian tutor books, and it's been on my shelf for years. And I'm always like, I loved Italian when I did it. I loved the sound of Italian. I really want to get back to Italian.
Yeah.
But it's always the one that, like, on balance, I'm like, yeah, but like Welsh is the non-negotiable.
Yeah.
French is the one that kind of comes in when, like, my Welsh class is going to break up for summer. And in the summer, then I do a bit of French.
Yeah.
And then there's just no space, because then I've done enough language for me. I don't want to do 12 a day. It's just not who I am. And I'm off and I'm just going to do something else, you know? And I don't like audio courses. It's just not really my thing.
You know, I've talked about this, I think, this week, last week, in an email.
People are
I
always
really,
like, Pimsleur on a walk. And I just don't enjoy it.
I really, really wish I did.
So
it would be so great, but I need something extra. Like, and I shared this in an email sort of week before we're saying this, of like ways that you can make them something more, you know, if you want it to work, you know, taking
if
it a bit
further. You want
to work,
right? But if you feel, do you want it to feel like work or not?
Exactly.
Both is legit, but do you want it to feel like work or not? Is a really good question, I think, in your own language learning.
Yeah.
And if you think, why is Kirsten good? Exceptionally good at English, it's because it didn't, I don't know, I wanted to work.
Like,
it's not
work.
Like I didn't work, but I like really wanted to. That's why I wanted to be really good. And I strongly, deeply, it's like one of my core beliefs as a person, if you really, really want to do something, there's a way. There's some kind of a way. This bizarre optimism thing.
I think that's good optimism.
Yeah.
I think it's also a really good point to end on. If you want to do something, there's a way.
There's a way. There's a way. Definitely. It's not no work, but there is a way.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been so good to talk to you about this. Because I think we've, you know, we've had these.
I was on a podcast with Lindsay.
But, you know, like I said about the phone box, we've had these little snippets where it's come up, and but I've never really heard you talk fully.
I didn't realize that there is a full story. I have a podcast episode. Do you want me to link you to? I have one
Please
episode.
Do.
Where I talked about, like, it, and the conclusion I come to is always like, it's kind of, is this good advice for another learner? Like, just be obsessed with it. Don't know, but you can't control. You can't control that.
If
it
you
comes,
can't.
Just don't close yourself, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Be open to it all. Brilliant. And so, people watching or listening, where can they find out more about you?
That is fluentlanguage.co.uk. I've got like a webinar-y thing. If you want to watch me talk slightly more systematically, that is fluentlanguage.co.uk/secret.
Brilliant.
That's all.
Secret.
Secret.
Excellent. Excellent. Well,
that's
thank you so
URL,
much.
Isn't it?
I like it. Thank you so much. I will link to those in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm sure I'll speak to you very, very soon.
You will. You will.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks for having me, Lindsay. Thank you.